Live streaming provided by Alpha Geek Radio and Alpha Geek Video. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
Finally, Friday is being brought to you this week by all of the awesome Major Spoilers VIPs from around the world. Their small monthly contribution ensures that this show continues and all of the shows. Major Spoilers continues, as well as the website majorspoilers.com. We'd love to have you on board. You can sign up at members.majorspoilers.com. Well, hello everyone. It's Steven Schleicher with you again this week. And this week we got a guest in studio. It's Dr. Brad Will.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Brad. How are you doing this week?
Doing good.
I'm glad you could join us.
Me too.
This is nice. So we certainly do have a bunch of people already in the chat room. I see Jarmo. I see Oland. I see Nate. I see Jarmo again. I see Jess the Red. Everybody's here this week. And we're all so happy that it's finally Friday. So I do not have a news segment this week. That's fine. We've got Brad here, and we can talk all about stuff. Why don't we talk about Brad, our guest, and then you guys can call in at 785-727-1939, or you can find me on Skype at Steven_Schleicher. So, Brad, you are quite a man of many talents.
Well, one could say that. And you just did.
So one of the things that I was always super curious about when you first brought it up was your work with the game industry.
Yeah.
So what kind of gaming stuff have you done in the game industry?
Mostly just RPG supplements.
Mm-hmm. And as an editor, as a creator?
As an editor. I've created next to nothing.
Oh, okay.
I simply improve on the work of others. Yeah.
But that's got to be fun, right? I mean, what are some of the RPGs that you've done?
Well, mostly Star Wars Saga Edition. And I did probably the worst ever D&D supplement. And I
because also, of your editing, or because it was just the worst supplement?
Just a goofy supplement. I didn't say that, by the way, folks at Wizards of the Coast who put that supplement together.
They don't even know which one you're talking about. Yeah. All those people have been replaced a long time ago.
They actually almost literally have, which is its own bit of sadness, actually. And then for Fantasy Flight's Age of Rebellion Star Wars game.
Ah, cool. Cool. Now, there was speaking of Star Wars real quick.
Yes.
There's a new Star Wars game that just came out, right?
Gonna be.
When's that come out? I thought I just saw somebody do an unboxing and talking about it online.
Star Wars Rebellion?
Yeah.
It's coming out March 31st.
Are you excited about that?
3 weeks. I am giddy with excitement.
Now, but this is not the one you just worked on, right?
No. I haven't worked on a book for them for ages.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because you'd said Star Wars, and I was like, oh, maybe it's the same one.
Yeah, No.
There's an interesting thing about working with the Star Wars book, though. You actually have a planet named after your kids.
I have, yeah.
Tell me how this went about.
I don't suppose that'll probably get me in any kind of Star Wars
because they allowed it and it went through.
It was, yeah, and it is not a goofball name. It is a good, solid Star Wars name. So I was editing a book, and the person who had written the planet for the book wrote a cool killer planet.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really cool description of a planet, but had kind of referenced a Frank Herbert's Dune in the name, as I recall, or in the name of the star. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, the original name, the written name of the planet, which I can also say because there are artifacts of this that still exist in the world, was something like Storim. Or something. It was a play on storm with an extra I in there, which was a kind of a weird, you know, that was not a very Star Wars-esque name.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned it to the guy who was the lead at the time. We were working on these books really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were two of us on the main editing team, and then Rodney Thompson was the lead for the project. And so I remember sitting outside, I would edit outside, and sitting outside and just looking at this and thinking, oh, this is terrible. And it was not terrible, but it was just not right, you know. And so I sent Roddy an email and said, dude, we got to change this. And he said, okay, what have you got? And I thought, that's it. This is my chance, you know. But the other guy who might have been sitting on his email also might have jumped on this too. So I just quickly tossed together, mixing the letters of my son's names,
mm-hmm.
and threw that back to Rodney and said, how about this? And he said, we'll go with it. And so I named the planet for that book. This was in the Star Wars Galaxy of Intrigue book.
Mm-hmm.
And we named the planet Nyrian, N-Y-R-I-A-A-N. And it stuck. But the weird thing was that this seemed like this was probably in, it might have been in July or August, or, you know, like sort of late summer that I did this. And we turn over the book, you know, with all the editing done, but then there's always this big gap between when a book gets, when you do the turnover after the edit, and then the book actually hits publication. And in that gap, Lucasfilm would vet everything, which would be, you know, I never saw, you know, I never knew if they liked things or didn't like things. I was done. Once I did my turnover, we'd move on to the next project, and that was it. I'd never see that book again until it came out. And so I was afraid to mention this to either the boys, that they would get their hopes up, or, you know, brag about it at school or something like this. And then somebody at Lucas would go, oh, that's a stupid name, and then change the name of the planet. So it wasn't until the following January when the book was released, that was when I finally got the confirmation. But I didn't get an advance copy. I got like a free copy at release.
Right.
And so I'm still waiting. But a couple of review copies had gone out. And so what I was doing was I was Googling that planet name. And I really should have, I really wish I'd kept track of this. And so we're about a week and a week and a half ahead of release, and I got a hit, and it was review, and somebody's like named the planet that was in the book. And I was like, yay. So I finally knew that we were going to be in there. And then I would Google it every like day or so. And it was weird, as you could see, like, you know, one hit in the whole world. It's also some kind of Tibetan word or something. So it would hit that way very bizarrely, but there'd be like one hit and then five hits and then 14 hits. And so each day it would go up incrementally, and then it just blew out geometrically with the number of hits that I got. And then I quit doing that. But I kind of wish I'd graphed it, you know, because you don't you know, how often do you ever introduce a word? I just hit the mic. Sorry.
Oh no, that's all right.
It's a weird.
You're so excited.
I am. I'm just, And so that's the, well, then the story of that gets even kind of more weird.
Right. With the, when they wiped out the entire universe.
Yeah. So Disney came in. This was back when you and I and Scott Robson were teaching that Star Wars class.
Mm-hmm.
While we were teaching the class, they, made the announcement that everything that had been expanded universe was going to be now Star Wars Legends.
Right.
And would not be canon anymore. And so Nyrian passed into the realm of non-canonical, and we all had a big sigh at my house.
Oh, I thought it was one that made it through.
Well, it did eventually, and so a few, like I think back in August of 15 or something.
Your story.
Yeah, it's all right. And so, yeah, you walked all over that. That's all right, man. there was a kid's book in the Rebels series.
Yeah,
and some random secondary character says that Nyrian is his home planet. So
very
now
nice.
we're back in canon, but in name only. But that's the only part I really care about.
Right. No, that's still awesome.
So the name is now back in canon.
But the cool thing is, though, even though you put that in and you checked and said, hey, can we just name the planet this? It still had to go through the Lucas, what's his name?
The Lucasfilm, like, vetting.
Whatever that guy's name is.
Oh, my God. Why can I not think of his name?
Is it Kim? I forget what his name is.
No, he's just a nice guy, too. And why can't I think of his name? Oh, well. Sorry. Leland Chi.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, Leland. Like he's watching.
He might be. But I mean, it had to go through him. So, I mean, if he had any question about it,
He
could have said, hey, this doesn't seem right.
Yeah. And they would have, you know, put the skids to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really awesome. So you've got a little place in Star Wars history still.
Yep.
And you're back in canon and not just relegated to the Legends universe.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Star Wars. The new stuff is like the new 52.
Kind of, yeah.
And all the other stuff is out there. So, yeah, Olin says that's a great story. It is a really great story. I think it's cool. So I guess the next question would be, you know, you've been doing editing work on and off for various companies for several years. How does one start doing that kind of thing?
Well, the way I didn't know I was particularly good at editing until one of my fellow professors just said, hey, would you take a look at this book manuscript for me before I send it off?
Mm-hmm.
And so I tore into it and just tightened his text up a lot, and or a little bit. We'll say a little bit, probably not a lot. He was a brilliant writer. But I had a really great time doing it and did it in just a few days. Just kind of went through and just, you know, did the old omit needless words thing and and had a good time. And then there was just not really an occasion for doing this. But at the time, I was also really into games, deeply into games. Games are cool. And there had been this miniature war game that I was really into called Chronopia. And it was in the... I can't remember the name of it. It was tied in with another science fiction game that was also a mini war game. There's actually been a movie based on it, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I can't remember even what it was, though, because it's just all passed out of my memory.
Such a long time ago.
Yeah, I only cared about the fantasy game, the Chronopia game. And it went out of business. It had been run by some Scandinavian company that was also tied into a candy company that went bankrupt. And then the miniatures line just went just totally belly up.
Right.
And then a couple of years after that, the minis line was bought up by some guys in Pennsylvania who also were working for FedEx at the time. So just sort of as a thing, they bought the rights to this game, and we're going to republish second edition Chronopia. And they were changing the rules, tweaking the rules a little bit, and they published like a little one page thing about here are the new unit deployment rules.
Right.
And they posted it on the internet. And the rules were cool conceptually, but just written in a really atrocious and kind of sad way.
Right.
And I thought, wow, that's really sad. And so I just, in a weird moment, decided I would write these guys a letter saying, hey, you know, maybe you need somebody to help you out with this. And then I even sent them like a little markup, you know, here's how I would change the rules you published. And they got back with me and said, great, let's work on this job. And sadly, they, I don't think, had ever hired an editor, and I had never been editing professionally. And so it was sort of, it was big time amateur hour on everybody's part. And so we had no contract,
right?
No deal for money or anything. I was just like, hey, I'll help you out. And I think they didn't entirely trust me, and none of us had ever heard of an NDA. A non-disclosure agreement, and so they were unwilling to just hand me the manuscript and say, edit this. And so they would sort of piece it out to me in dribs and drabs, and I was also trying to be a professor, and so it was going way too slowly. I mean, it was just, and there was no schedule. It was just do whatever you can do when you can do it. And so I edited parts of that book I never saw. And then it also turned out that apparently the manuscript they had bought was not the manuscript that was published.
Oh, no.
They had bought, I guess, the pre-edited. So it didn't, the manuscript I was given did not have the editing from the original edition. It was like the raw manuscript.
Right.
So it needed a lot of work.
Oh, no.
And they knew it. I mean, that's why they were like, oh, yeah, sure, come do this. So anyway, I threw a lot of work into that and edited about a third or half of that book. And then... I don't know. It was just kind of a weird scene. And then those guys just never got back to me, which was weird. And so I caught them at a... I didn't catch them. Like,
you guys, I see you over there. Yeah, hiding behind table.
I stopped at their booth at a convention and said, hey, you know, I'm the guy who edited your book. You think I could like get a free copy or something? and the guy who was the head of the company was like, oh, wait here a minute. And he like disappeared for about 5 or 10 minutes. And I'm standing there thinking, well, what did he go get security? Where'd this guy go? And then he comes back and goes, here's a free copy. And I was like, oh, thanks. Okay, cool. Which I was fine. I mean, that was what I, you know, that was pretty cool. So yeah, that was my first kind of do-it-yourself job.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, on the basis of that, I mean, not really on the basis of that, but I was doing some other stuff with students here at Fort Hays State University.
Right.
And they had started the Tabletop Gaming Association. And one of those guys was really into game design. And we did a class, an independent study class about editing game rules. So he was creating these game rules.
Yeah.
And then we just talked about how to tighten them up. And then somebody else, another guy he knew, had created an RPG system. And we ended up, I mean, it was the sort of non-class class. It was just the two of us kind of rolling through stuff. That was Logan Bonner. Hey, Logan, if you're watching.
Hey, he might be.
Hey. So Logan was, I guess he was about a junior or senior then. And then eventually, just as he was getting ready to graduate, he applied for an editing job at Wizards of the Coast. And then I remember the day he like pulled up outside my house and he got the job. And so I, you know, Logan was my inside guy. And so he went out to Seattle and then I was always watching, and Wizards was, you know, they would put up jobs, and I went out there and interviewed for an editing job that later disappeared. But then I just kind of got on the list of freelancers for them, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Excellent. Cool. Yeah. That's a great story, man. We'll come back. I got some more questions for you. But first, let's go to the phone lines. Hello, caller. Who is this?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Nate.
Hey.
NATO. What's going on?
Just chilling,
besides,
you know.
Making me feel incompetent.
Why is that?
Oh, no. Well, just, I mean, editing and books. Like, I can always semi-verbalize stuff, but whenever I try to put stuff on paper or just talk in my, I don't know. I'm just jealous. That's all.
Okay. I've only edited two books in my life. One was an audio production book by Douglas Spotted Eagle. And then another one was a blogging book by Charlie White. One was a technical edit. The other one was just a, can you proof it and see if there's anything missing in this one? So those are the ones that I've got. So
it's a weird talent to have.
I guess I don't go in. I'm not copy editing punctuation. I'm going in for, you know, is this the right information? Is it presented this way? What information is missing? That's how they approach me for that kind of stuff. So
Yeah.
So what are you doing this Friday, Nate? Are you already on the way home?
Oh, yeah, I'm actually home. I'm kind of just chilling before doing my normal taekwondo fun stuff.
Excellent.
Now that it's 5 days a week now, so I take a couple of days break. But Friday's always the fun day where we'll do sparring or combat weapons or something like that. So, pretty cool.
Neat.
But actually, I had an exciting weekend. You may or may not know, but I foster for a for dachshunds, right?
Oh, cool.
So we had one for 18 months and just got adopted last week. And so she had took 18 months, but we found a good home. So
excellent.
That sounds excruciating, though, to give up a puppy after 18 months.
We know we've been in it, and it's a fostering thing, right?
We
had like 12 or 13. Or she came. Some stayed for like 2 months, some stayed for 2 or 3 days. We actually just lost her yesterday that I got adopted in like 8 hours. So they, the train keeps trucking around here. So it's pretty cool. But got to see my very first movie premiere, kind of an indie film premiere thing on Wednesday, that Mind Taker I talked about last week.
Yeah.
It was good. It was really good. The premise of the movie is, it kind of talks about this teenage girl, and she's in high school, and she can kind of, she's telepathic, and she can turn it off whenever she wants to.
Mm-hmm.
And if she touches, he makes actually go into memories and thoughts and helps them out. But then there's a big bad and there's a whole big twist. So I got to see part of it at a convention, and they actually expanded it. So it was a big half hour, and they showed it at this really, really old playhouse in Lake Worth, Florida, and it was fun. So
yeah, we're looking at some of the pictures right now.
Yeah, if they're trying to shop it out to some stuff, but if it comes across, I recommend it. I mean, again, it's an indie film, but I like the premise, and what they did with some of the stuff was really, really cool. So
yeah, no, definitely. So are they not at South by Southwest trying to push it around?
No, because it's very, very small independent. So I don't think they pushed it out that far. They may have, but I don't know. I don't know if they were done in time.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing. So, okay. Because this was actually the first time this was publicly shown.
Cool. Neat.
So,
well, I'm glad you had fun.
It was good. And actually, my son really wanted to go. He's like, oh, man, I want to go. So I actually bought him a ticket. So we had a little night out on a Wednesday night. So it was pretty cool.
Neat.
And then I know you guys are excited for Ghostbusters 2, the board game, right?
Not Ghostbusters 2, the board game. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is coming out. I didn't know there was a Ghostbusters 2 board game coming out.
It was announced today. I thought you guys would be
able to. Oh, no, I hadn't even seen it.
Announced with Sony Pictures that in April they're doing a new Kickstarter for Ghostbusters 2, the board game.
Oh, wow. Where was that at? Was that at...
It was on their Twitter feed. I just...
Cryptozoic announces Ghostbusters 2 board game. There it is, coming out in April of 2016.
Cool.
Yeah, it's when the Kickstarter starts.
Yeah.
So I'm like, ooh, cool.
Game picks up where the last one ended. There are new allies, new gear like slime blower packs, ecto goggles, and portal destabilizers, and of course, new ghosts to bust. There's a Ghostbusters comic to go along with it, too. Viggo the Carpathian is back, and he has mood goo with him causing all sorts of havoc on the streets of New York. So there you go.
Is this like, does it look like an expansion?
Looks like it's a whole new game, it doesn't look like an expansion.
Cool.
But yeah, April is when the Kickstarter kicks off, huh?
That's cool.
And very neat.
Last thing is your Major Spoilers podcast, you're talking about marketing with the Dr. Pepper cans and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. You're the guy to talk to about this.
Yeah, yeah. So what it is Dr. Pepper is owned by Dr. Pepper Snapple.
Right.
Now, there are some independent bottlers and PepsiCo corporate bottlers that have a contract with Dr. Pepper Snapple to produce and distribute Dr. Pepper and 7-Up and other things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with those contracts, what they do is they do cross-promotional. Now, Frito is owned by PepsiCo.
Right.
Right? So they can do a lot of that cross-promotional tie-ins and stuff. During the Super Bowl, of course, it was really prominent because, you know, snacks and soda and all the other music goes on. But, yeah, that's kind of how that works is that they, because with the soda and the chips and stuff like that, that's how they kind of are able to mingle some stuff together and work side by side.
But
they are separate companies.
Yeah.
So Dr. Pepper, even though my location actually produces and distributes Dr. Pepper, places like in St. Louis, Missouri, there's actually a Dr. Pepper plant does all that stuff.
Oh, cool. Okay. Neat. Well, I'm glad that there's synergy then between companies to make this happen.
And secretly, Disney owns it all, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
was there a, I guess my wife had asked, I don't know if you know or not, but my wife had asked, how come Batman's on Dr. Pepper, Superman's on Diet Dr. Pepper, and Wonder Woman has to be on Cherry Dr. Pepper or whatever that flavor is?
Oh, I don't know why they did that. I'm guessing they put Batman on Dr. Pepper because he's the big draw.
Ah, okay.
It's Batman.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Batman.
I mean, he's Batman. But actually, I was trying to get some of these cans myself, but it's so weird because I can never figure out what schedule, and I had to go somewhere else. And then by the time I came back, they already produced everything. So it's like, grr. So, but yeah, I think we did produce all six of those cans.
Oh, okay. I see five. I see the Lois Lane, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and Lex Luthor. Is there another one?
No, it's five. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because it's Dr. Pepper, Ken, and Cherry Dr. Pepper, and then Diet Cherry Dr. Pepper.
Yeah. You know what? Hey, you're the guy that I need to talk to, Nate. Because here's the thing. I just threw my container away, but here's the flavor of Dr. Pepper that I love. And when it comes to sodas, this is my kryptonite. See, we're tying this all in. Vanilla Dr. Pepper is my favorite. And the only place you can get it is if you go to Sonic and they inject a vanilla flavor in there. But I thought at one time you guys had a vanilla Dr. Pepper that was a limited run or something. And
they
I have
do,
not been able to find
it
since.
I think it's in select markets still. I don't know where I would be willing to look. But there is a Diet Dr. Pepper Cherry Vanilla.
Ugh, now that sounds gross, but just a plain vanilla Dr. Pepper.
But,
the best.
That was my favorite. But for some reason, the diet had a different flavor that I just liked.
Huh.
But the Diet Cherry Vanilla Dr. Pepper. I mean, it's a mouthful to try to say it, and maybe that's why I'm making it. But the yeah, that was. I want to say that it may show up zoning some in some areas and stuff like that. But
okay.
Yeah, it's not that it's not made. I'm pretty sure that it's out there floating around somewhere.
Well, at one time it was at our local big box store, and I bought a bunch of it, and then it's never been packed since. I think it was around Christmas or something is when they had it, and I haven't seen it since, or maybe last summer. But you're the guy in charge over there at PepsiCo. Make all this happen. I need my vanilla Dr. Pepper
right
back on the
it.
Store shelves. All right, Nate. You have a great weekend, man.
All right, guys. Take it easy.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
And let's go right to, hopefully this person didn't hang up. Hello, who's this?
Hey, it's Chris.
Hey, Chris, what's going on? Are you ready for C2E2?
I am not working it this year. It's on the weekend of my wife's birthday, so not really, I guess.
Probably a wise choice to go with the birthday instead of the C2E2.
I would get in mucho trouble if I worked there. So, yeah.
So what's going on with you, man?
Not much. I just wanted to call. I actually just 2 days ago listened to watched last week's Finally Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you and say good job on the advice that you gave.
Oh, thank you.
Podcasting. I don't podcast, but it's still, I found it very informative and helpful, even just for the toy reviews that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it still applied, I thought.
Oh, yeah, I think a lot of it applies across, you know, a variety of different things that people do.
Definitely, and some of it made me happy, and then it also made me depressed, because I was like, oh, some of that we do, and then some of that we either don't do or, yeah, we do it the wrong way. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, there's not a right way or wrong way to present a message. I guess there's your way of doing it. From the technical side, there would be some better ways of doing things, but I don't think that there's besides like covering yourself with feces and doing a toy review, I mean, that would definitely be a wrong way to do it. So, you know,
right.
I don't think you're going the wrong way with what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is we're unfortunately limited technically, I guess, budget-wise. I'd like to get lights and stuff like that, but we can't afford it. But, you know, we only really need a table, a toy, and a camera. So
well,
I bought the camera that I need, you know, with a good mic, and it actually has a light. So
yeah, so, but, I mean, you've
you
got...
Know, stuff, but,
that's
sorry,
the other. On. That's the other thing people forget is you start with what you can afford and what you have, and then as you start to learn more and as you start to do more, then you can upgrade gear. We talked about this several months ago. Someone had called in and said, oh, Steven, you know, your camera, your image quality looks so much better. It's like, yes, because we finally were able to swap out the old cruddy $200 cameras that we bought at Walmart for some nicer, more professional cameras that look good on the stream and elsewhere. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then I upgraded my editing software to the Adobe Premiere Effects or whatever that
is.
So, yeah, slowly but surely.
Little
so,
by little. Good.
I just want to thank you for that. And I lived up to my end of the bargain. I became a donator. So.
Yep, you are. Definitely.
There's no reason anybody else should do it. If I can do it, I mean, I work for you.
You
so
do.
No
yeah.
Anybody else should do it. And I was already a subscriber, and I may be a subscriber to your YouTube channel twice because I have two accounts.
I don't care. YouTube doesn't care. All they look at is numbers.
I'm just saying, FYI. I'm cheating the system for you.
There you go.
So,
I may have three YouTube accounts that people don't know about.
Exactly. You know, do what you can, right?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to call in, say what's up, and let you know it was much appreciated.
All right, cool.
Again, yeah. We appreciate you putting up the stuff for us. We tell people you're the nicest guy on the internet. So.
I'm not so sure about that, but Will Wheaton does a pretty good job. Brad Will does a pretty good job. So, all right, man.
You do a great job. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, do you have anything big planned for the weekend?
I hopefully can survive it with two kids. I have the new one.
Mm-hmm.
The new sidekick, and then I got the 4-year-old. It's been stressful. I'm not used to having two to deal with.
Oh, I know, so, and it gets crazier, you know, as they get older. Wait till they start punching each other.
Oldest is eight.
He is 8 and will turn 9 in June. The youngest is 4 and will turn 5 next month. And, man, these guys punch each other and they're mean to each other. And it's like, guys, come on, don't you love one another? Oh, yes, I love my brother. Oh, yes, he's so cool. Well, would you guys knock it off? So you have that to look forward to.
Wait till they're teenagers.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there wondering, like, how kids live past the age of 4 without either killing themselves or having their parents just, like, strangle them. Or
yeah.
One, you know? Like,
yeah, no, I understand. I know where you're coming
it's
from.
It's just like, dude, you're eating stuff off of your shoe. Well, that could be poisonous and kill you. Like, oh, I don't understand this. So, yeah, you know. If you live to 7, I'll be totally happy. I can't wait. So.
Well, take care of those kids and don't let them eat anything off their shoe this weekend. All right, Chris?
Have a good one, man.
All right, you too, man. Bye.
Bye.
And be sure, if you would, go over to YouTube and check out the Shock and Awe toy reviews that Chris and his friend do. Very entertaining if you're into toys and you want a detailed. Now, we do at Major Spoilers, we do the unboxing stuff a lot of times, and we'll look at it. These two break down a toy, and they go into it in detail, and it's very entertaining to watch. So if you're into action figures, that is the one you want to watch. Now, you got a couple of older boys, right?
Yeah, my guys are 13 and 15.
Wow, in high school? Both of them?
One's in middle school still.
Oh, okay.
Next year, everybody will be in high school together.
Yay, that'll be fun, won't it?
Yeah.
All right, go to the phone lines. Hey, who's this?
Hey, it's Bill Schweigert. How you guys doing?
Hey, Bill, what's going on?
A whole lot of nothing. I had you guys are making me sad. I just listened to your dueling review of Mockingbird number 1.
Yeah, you didn't like it?
And no, I did. I like it very much. The problem is I have no more space for physical issues, so I subscribe to Marvel Unlimited.
Right.
But they're six months behind on everything.
Yeah, Marvel Unlimited is always 6 months behind. That's kind of in the weird agreement that they did to both appease the local comic shop and to appease Comixology with the contract that they had. Those issues are 6 months behind.
Okay, that explains it.
If you want the most current one,
I'm wallowing in that 6 month gap.
Yeah, if you want the most current, you need to go through Comixology to get those, or you can just wait 6 months and then they'll appear. Although, are you a Marvel Unlimited person?
I'm not. No.
No, I think it's I guess I am, but I haven't I guess my subscription's about to lapse, and they keep telling me, "Hey, update your credit card." but I think Brian. Brian Ibbett is also, and he said in some cases they're slipping in some issues more than 6 months behind. So you might want to be aware of that. But somebody told me on Twitter today, and this could be a good thing for Major Spoilers, that, and I went and verified this, you can now go to Amazon, because Comixology is an Amazon company. You can go to Amazon, you can look for the single issue, and if it says Kindle Plus Other, that's usually the Comixology one. So you can buy those comics through Comixology, through the Amazon link at Major Spoilers, and then a little bit comes back our way for that.
Wow.
So for years I've been telling Comixology, you need to make it a way so that people can do these embeds on their site so that they can buy those issues, because someone like you, Bill, could be listening to a dueling review and say, I want to buy that book now. Click on that link, they buy the book, and there you go. But now that Amazon looks like they can do it, that's another option for you.
That's good. Well, I don't know. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to have the willpower to hold out for 6 months. So,
all right. So
I may have to break down.
All right. So Beast of Barcroft is out now. Northwoods just came out last month at the middle of February. How is everything going?
Everything's going really well. So I think I mentioned the last time I called in that Random House had dropped the price for 2 weeks, did a sale for 99 cents for the Beast of Barcroft, you know, in anticipation of releasing Northwoods. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, they distributed through newsletters and whatever, but it shot up in the Amazon rankings, and the Beast of Barcroft hit number 1 in the dark fantasy category of horror.
Cool.
So That was awesome. I hit number one, so that was pretty cool.
No, that's awesome, man. That's going to make you feel good.
That does make me feel good, and that, you know, has helped give Northwoods a little goose as well. So now I just have to wait. Have all those people who were kind enough to go out there and download it to
start read putting it their reviews
review
in.
And,
yeah.
And I got some exciting news this week. I was asked by Random House to participate in this horror anthology called Dark Screams. It comes out, I'm not sure how often it comes out, but they're on the sixth volume, and there's usually five authors per volume. The first volume had Stephen King as one of the authors.
Wow.
Subsequent members were Peter Straub, Clive Barker, all these horror titans. So,
and now we can add Bill Schweigart to that list.
I can at least be able to say I was the other guy in one of those in one of those anthologies. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, if you ever need an editor, here's Brad's always looking for some editing work.
Seriously, there's some editing firepower on today's Finally Friday.
Yeah. So
believe
awesome.
Me, I need one.
Well, get in contact with Brad. You can find him on Twitter at
Dr. Bradley Will.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good to know. What did you guys think of the Civil War trailer?
I thought it was okay. I mean, it didn't really add much. I think the big draw was, and there's, you know, my whole business side of it is the last 2 seconds of Spider-Man at the end was there just so that they could drive everybody to those YouTube channels and bump up those numbers and make some monies on the back end from that. But they really didn't add too much more to the trailer itself. I thought this is a trailer that tells me more about what the movie is and where the conflict comes from. And this is really the movie that should have, or this is the trailer that should have been the one that debuted in cinemas, not online. So I thought it
was
good.
Very true. But what did you think of the snippet of Spider-Man?
I thought it was fine. I mean, honestly, I think that it's a, I think that we're seeing some still early work stuff. This is probably something that was done back in December and January. And so the complaints about it looks too rubbery or it looks CGI. All the Spider-Mans with their full costumes on have been CGI, especially when they're jumping and tumbling around. So it's nothing new for me.
Yes.
Brad didn't like it, though.
Yeah, we are definitely of differing opinions here. Yeah. Yeah. The whole eyeball thing is just not, that does not work for me.
It works in the, it's there in the, it's in the comics.
I love
it's in
it
the
in
cartoons.
The comics. I love Ramos drawing Spider-Man, but you know, and I love the expressive eyes on the comic, but in my photorealistic movie,
mm-hmm.
that makes no sense to me and is slightly disturbing and makes my face itch.
Yeah. Former number one spoilerite, former number one spoilerite, not Nate, but former number one spoilerite, Julian, bumped into the Twitter today. And he was like, look, people are making a lot of assumptions based on 2 seconds worth of video that we've seen. We don't know if that those expressive eyes are actually tied to his facial features or if there's something mechanical. Now, a lot of people said you can hear some whirring as those eyes narrow down, like they're really mechanical. Maybe it has something to do with narrowing the focus down or some telescopic vision or something.
Because mechanical telescopic vision has always been part of the Spider-Man mask that I'm familiar with.
Yes. Well, If Tony Stark, see, we know nothing about it though, right?
I everything I know about it, I don't like already. You know, and I'm not that guy. I'm not the guy who sits here and says, but so far, 100% of what I know about Spider-Man in this movie is not particularly pleasant.
Yeah, it does feel kind of forced, right? I mean, Spider-Man's kind of feels forced in this when you have Black Panther and all these other characters from the previous movie that you can put into this and help build your story because of this deal with, I think Sony really needs the money, because of this deal with Sony to share Spider-Man now, I think Marvel was almost had to put Spider-Man in the movie. And so it may seem rushed in some places.
Yeah, but.
And he has web cartridges on his belt, says Nate, which I like too.
Well, I'm totally down with web cartridges. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did you think?
I dug it. I did. You know, I'm a Marvel kid from way back. So in retrospect, I don't know how it's going to work with his eye discs, but
mm-hmm.
it did give me a thrill when I watched it the first time, whether or not it makes sense or it plays out, that's fine. But the most exciting thing to me about Spider-Man was actually hearing his voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's so obvious. It's a teenager. And
that's what
excites me most about it, that they're actually having a teenage portrayal, not 30-year-old Tobey Maguire you know, pretending to be it.
Yeah.
I dug it.
Some people loved it. Some people hated it. I liked it. I said it's not something that upsets me that much. I'm willing to see how it plays out in the movie. And if it's something that's a gimmick that continually... I mean, they made it work for Deadpool. Did you see Deadpool, Brad?
I haven't got to see Deadpool yet. Can you believe that?
Deadpool does the same thing.
That's Deadpool, man. Deadpool is Deadpool. That's a totally different...
But it's still a mask with eyes that move.
That's Deadpool's mask can have eyes that move because Deadpool
but not your
is
Spider-Man,
crazy.
Right. All right.
You know, Deadpool killed Mark Twain or something. So
I'm willing to wait. We're going to have a much bigger discussion about this next week on the Major Spoilers podcast because Matthew is just like dying to weigh in on his hatred for this. So
go, Matthew.
I'm sure we will talk about this next week. But, you know, it really seems from my informal polling today, it seems like it's basically split 50-50. I mean, some people are like, I don't like it. And other people are like, I think it's fine. So I guess we'll see how it plays out in the movie.
Yeah, and I say all that, but I'm totally jazzed for this movie and will love it, wiggly eyes or not, probably. So
yeah. Cool. Anything else, Bill?
No, just calling to say have a great weekend.
All right, you too, man. And listeners, don't forget, you can go check out The Beast of Barcroft and Northwoods, both over there at Amazon.com. You can use that Amazon link at Major Spoilers. You can buy these books. The Kindle editions are only $2.99. That's nothing for how many pages are each of these? Like 200 pages each?
200 and then 275. So you're getting a meal.
Yeah. So you're getting like a buck for every 100 pages. It's a penny a page, dude. That's a deal. That is a deal. All right, Bill. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too, guys. Thanks.
All right.
Bye. Easy.
Yeah. Oh, but now we got another one. Jarmo is calling in. Hey, Jarmo. What's going on, man?
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Your audio sounds fantastic.
Oh, that's really nice to hear.
So what's going on over where you're at this week?
Nothing much. I just had a real nice game of X-Wing miniatures.
Oh, cool. You know what? Hey. I have yet to start editing this stupid footage, but on Monday, there will be an X-Wing miniatures game with Brad and I playing.
Yay.
Yes, that's really nice to hear. I'm a big fan of that game.
I'm not sure we do the game justice, though.
I'm not sure I do the game justice.
Maybe Brad does.
I'm not sure I do Steven justice in that game. I have a really jerk move in that game that I just think, you'll see it when you see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's much about the experience. I'm pretty sure Steven gets better at it when he's got few games under his belt.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And plus when I can switch things out, because we were doing some practice stuff to make sure that we were all down with what we were remembering from the rules and everything. And so we were using the same team like three times in a row. So by the time we actually recorded it, I was like, oh, Brad is actually probably going to be able to beat me, or maybe not. You'll have to watch and see. But there were some things that we saw ahead of time that I was like, oh, I did not plan this team correctly.
Yeah, and it's really much like, well, actually most of the kind of more complex miniature games are like that. Your squadron selection, it really means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, maneuvering in that game, it's also really important.
We had to make sure we knew our left from our rights quite a bit. Because sometimes you dial it and you're thinking left and you actually dialed right and it's like,
Yeah, but it's still enough about the dice rolls that you don't get really mad if you lose because it's still a little bit about the luck. But yeah, I had a couple of things to comment about which you have already talked about.
Okay.
One is... toy review.
Okay.
I finally got one of those Takara Tomy Masterpiece Transformers figures.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I have to say, after 30 years, we finally have reached the point when the Transformers figures are what they're supposed to look like and they actually work.
Yeah.
Like they are... like I imagined them in 1986 or something like that.
Yeah. I was not into Transformers.
Fantastic.
I was not that much into Transformers growing up because they were expensive toys. You know, any toy for me was expensive growing up. But then there was also the cheaper GoBots.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine was just like totally into GoBots. So he would come to school with his little GoBots and make them do their thing during class and was always getting in trouble with them. But I always thought they were kind of cool, but I don't know. I'm glad that the toys have gotten better. Were you a Transformers fan?
I can kind of see that.
Nah.
They were especially expensive in here in Northern Europe, where we pay the pretty much same you did, plus the import tax, plus small market extra.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had like a dozen of them, and wow. it was enough for me. But now I realized that what I thought they looked like in the 80s, now they actually do look like it.
Cool.
Are they more fun? Because my recollection was always that doing the transformation, I never actually owned any, but other people did, right? But doing the transformation always seemed like kind of a nightmare intellectual exercise that I was never quite capable of.
Yeah.
Have they resolved that issue at all?
No, they are actually more complex now.
Oh, no.
But I would think that the person with PhD could handle it.
you would be surprised by that, actually. So.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was the Chronopia, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm from Northern Europe, and the people that made the games of Chronopia and the, I would say, the sibling game which was Warzone.
That's right, yeah, yes.
Yeah, the company that made them is actually Swedish, called Target Games.
Right, but weren't they were associated somehow with like a Prince Albert candy company or something, is that right?
Yeah, Prince Albert is a British company that makes miniatures. I think that's the connection.
But there was somehow I remember there being a candy company involved with Target Games.
I can imagine that.
That makes no sense, though.
There could be something involved in that, but I'm not in the knowledge. I knew that it's originally a collectible card game called Mutant Chronicles.
Yes, right. Yeah, and there was a Mutant Chronicles movie,
And then it was a tabletop role playing game, like traditional pen and paper one. And then it came the miniature game called Warzone.
Okay, yeah. And I only ever had the main box of that.
Excuse me. And Chronopia is kind of a fantasy spin-off of Warzone.
Right. Yeah, and Target Games was really big back in, and this would have been about 94, 95, as I recall, maybe later in the 90s.
Yes, mid to late 90s.
Yeah, but they were putting out a magazine. They just had all kinds of things going. And then it all just sort of crumbled down one day, I guess probably right around 2000 or so, as I recall.
Yeah, I don't have any knowledge about what actually happened there, because I remember about that the rule system was actually really, really good about for the squad level miniature game.
Yeah.
Like you have a dozen figures or so.
Yeah, and it was a man-to-man game, which was my attraction for it. That each model actually represented one dude. And
yes.
And so that made more sense to me than say the larger scale, you know, where a model represented 10 guys or whatever.
Yeah, and it had actually very good attention to detail about you had every miniature had its own actions. You could fire, raise your weapon, aim, go to cover, and things like that. It was really tactical.
Yeah, it was a great system.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm looking at some of the images online right now, and looked like a fun game.
And I had heard that so Excelsior was the company that brought back second edition, and I had heard that when they sort of went belly up, that all the molds for the models were finally destroyed, so that that it's nobody gone, gone.
Can do it.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah, which is a shame. I'm not sure that that's true though, but that's what I heard.
If that's true, it's really a shame.
Yeah, because they were great models.
Because especially the ones for the first edition, they were really cool and themed in interesting ways.
Yeah.
Although they had kind of basis on in real life, what should I say, in Mutant Chronicles they were super corporations, but in real life they were kind of Japanese, British, US and things like that, with a little of Vatican Inquisition and demons mixed in the kind of their setting.
And that had kind of a World War One vibe, as I recall, right?
Yes, that was Imperial. They were British,
yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, they were very much British doughboys with gas masks and doughboy helmets. Yeah.
Yes, they had some kind of their regular troops were pretty much like World War One British, and their special troops were kind of SAS and then the Scottish barbarians.
That's
with
right.
A little bit of with a sci-fi mix.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing that information.
Yeah, we should dig that game out, Stephen.
We should if you have it.
I do. I've got a bunch of orcs and a bunch of elves painted up and ready to go.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
All right, Jarmo. Thanks for calling in, man.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I just wanted to share that because it's kind of a thing which not many people know about, and it was kind of a big deal in Northern Europe and in the late 90s.
Excellent. Cool. All right, man. Have a great weekend.
Yeah. Same to you. Bye, guys.
Easy. Bye. Now, there is a 3D game, a 3D printed game called Pocket Tactics. I think I've mentioned this before. I don't know much about it, except that all of the game pieces, from the little tiles that you lay out to the miniatures that you play with, are all 3D printed.
Okay.
And they have different factions and different themes and all these different things that are going on with it. It seems very, very cool. I finally downloaded one of the little pieces and printed it off. And it literally is Pocket Tactics because the piece is probably, a half inch tall. And that's one of the just regular soldiers. They have some taller ones, but they are really, really miniature.
And you can tell what it is?
You can kind of tell what it is. Yeah, yeah. I should have brought it in here. I'll pull it out whenever when we're done with the show so you can see it. But it's like the tip of an eraser almost.
Wow.
And unfortunately, I tried to print it at super high resolution on my 3D printer, but it wouldn't print out with a whole lot of detail. It kept failing. But when I printed it out at a standard version, it printed it out. It looks a little smushy. But you could certainly, if you were playing this in a game, you would be able to tell which character it was.
And if they're tiny enough, you can get a ton of them on a table.
Yeah, yeah. And it's basically you put them all in one little bag. The whole game can be carried around in one little small dice bag.
That's cool.
Yeah, you'll have to check it out. It's over on Thingiverse.com.
All right.
Matthew, how are you doing, man? You are done with your game convention. How did that go?
Oh, that was so crazy. We usually on a 3-day convention, your Friday, it's kind of slow to get everybody to show up.
Yeah.
We had full house.
Wow. That's great.
Over 300 people.
That's awesome.
Like, it was nowhere to sit. We were going to try to run scheduled events. None of them happened.
Oh, because it was just
nowhere
so packed.
To have it.
Oh no.
People showed up, they grabbed games, they played. I spent most of the convention actually running from table to table, like getting people started.
Oh, cool. But that's going
to
be fun though, right?
You know how to play this game? Oh yeah. Let me get you started. Get a couple of rounds. All right. You guys got it? Yep. All right.
Oh, that's cool, though.
Run
I mean,
over and help somebody else.
I think that's wonderful that people are just like, hey, let's go play games and maybe not play an organized play or a tournament or something like that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well because it was really nice weather. So people were, you know, inclined to leave their home. And socially on the calendar, we didn't conflict with anything. So it turned out to have a pretty good turnout.
Excellent. So what do you think about this Ghostbusters 2 news that came out today?
Oh, I have not heard it.
Well, apparently, Nate that broke it to us, told us that Sony and Cryptozoic are teaming up for a second Ghostbusters board game that picks up where the other one left off and includes some new weapons and stuff. And it's the Kickstarter will happen in April. I'm going to bet that a lot of the success of the, even though it's not Cryptozoic, but the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game had a lot of to do with convincing them to go ahead with this second Ghostbusters game.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Minis are such a hot thing now too. Like the Cool Mini or not, I mean, they just have a license to print money. You just put Zombicide on a box and it's $1 million on Kickstarter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. We just finished up this week. I don't know if you listen to Munchkinland this week, but we just finished up a discussion on our favorite games that we're looking forward to. And we each had about three games each where we talked about, this game's coming out or just finished on Kickstarter or whatever that we were hyped about. But man, now there's even more games coming out.
Yeah, I need to probably not spend quite so much time on Kickstarter, but I finally went back to work, which is my work schedule's not exactly finally Friday friendly.
Oh, that's so. Okay. I understand it's not that way for everybody, but we're glad that you're able to come in because I wanted to see how the convention went. So I'm glad it worked out really well.
It was pretty good. We gave out a whole bunch of freebie games for if you pre-registered, and those went super fast.
Excellent. Excellent.
And we had a bunch of play to win games, probably 20 games.
Wow.
Nice.
What was the top game?
The top played game or checked out anyway was Codenames at 10.
We have
10 checkouts is all.
We played that game.
So many different things.
Yeah, we've played that game. It's a lot of fun. Brad brought it over one night, and we had a lot of fun with it.
The play-to-win games, those were on a kind of a different little area. We had one game. It got over 80 plays.
What game was that?
Between Two Cities from Stonemaier Games.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah,
I don't
know that. Yeah.
It's kind of you have to have an odd number of people to play, starting at three anyway and going up. The way that it works, from what I understand, is that you sit between two player boards, and you and the person to your left will work on a board, and you and the person to the right will work on a different board, and then same for everybody all the way around.
Oh, interesting.
So you're in between the two cities.
I see.
You're working, and the scoring is you don't want to be the best city, but you want to be like the second best or not the highest of the high or something like that. It had a strange kind of scoring, but it was relatively quick, I guess. So many people.
Well, this looks like this was a Kickstarter game that finished in, what's the close date on this? It pledged, they raised $221,000 on this thing back in November, I guess.
Yeah, Stonemaier, if there's anybody that you would ever want to hit up for some tips on how to do a Kickstarter, it would be Jamie Stegmaier.
Okay.
Yeah,
he is the master of Kickstarter.
There is some other game that I know that Stonemaier has done, but I can't place that in my head.
He's done Euphoria, which was pretty big, and Scythe is the biggest one. It did over $1 million.
Nice.
That one still has yet to be actually it funded a while back, and I got in on that one, so hopefully I'll have a copy of that coming whenever it comes in. But yeah, I think he's even wrote a book on, like, you know, how to make sure that your Kickstarter has the best chance of, you know, working for you if you do these things.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Very neat. Anything else?
No, I just kind of wanted to check back in about that, about the convention and all of that. And so I'm not sure. I'm going to try to get in tomorrow on the VIP there.
Yeah.
And,
oh, thanks for bringing that up. Tomorrow, for those of you who are Gold VIP members, if you're watching now or listening in the future, 1 o'clock Central Time, Saturday, March 12th, we will be doing the live stream over at the members' site. So if you are a Gold VIP, make sure you jump into that. I did send out an email to everyone, so you should have received that. But we'd love to see you there and have conversations like this. Tomorrow it'll be Rob, Brian, and I. Matthew might slip in if his daughter's birthday party is over. And then Rodrigo let me know that his internet blew up. We were having some internet problems with him on Wednesday when we were doing Critical Hit. But he said that, yep, his internet finally kaputted. And so they're waiting for the company to come out and fix it probably on Monday. So he won't be available for that. So, but thank you for mentioning that, Matthew.
It did seem like, too, on Munchkin Minute, somebody had mentioned Sentinels of the Multiverse, I think, because it was one of Kickstarter's that's ending.
Yep, that one is finished. It finished today, in fact. And
I got in on that one to help finish out all the other stuff that I got.
Oh,
I didn't
yeah.
know if it was any plan to maybe have that on some Munchkin Minute.
Well, we did play. It's not. I don't think we released it yet because we are so far ahead on all of our Munchkin Land stuff. Mm. We recorded one.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. We actually did Sentinels of the Multiverse. I can't tell you much about it, but it gets very frustrating about halfway through.
Oh, yeah.
Because of something that Rob does.
Yeah.
So it does become very frustrating. But in the process, just came in today, I have, which I didn't realize there were all these little standalone expansion things like the Wager Master and... Silver Gulch 1873 and all that stuff. So John, who's been doing some art over at the VIP site, he was like, here are all the ones that you're missing from your Sentinels of the Multiverse stuff. So I went and got those ahead of the closing of the Oblivion thing. So now I will have everything and a box to put it in a couple of months when the, November, when Sentinels of the Multiverse Oblivion completes or arrives. So.
We had a game day last week, and we played some of that. And I played Guys, who is basically Deadpool.
Oh yeah, cool.
That one is really fun.
Yeah, man, Sentinels of the Multiverse. I really love that game, even though it's super frustrating at times.
Yes,
but we also played recently. We've also played the DC deck building game, Sentinels of the Multiverse, Ghostbusters, which is probably a 3-part video series. We don't get through all the way through a whole campaign because of some technical issues. And then X-Wing, which should happen on Monday. Then we've got the Dice Masters, and I don't know if you saw the unboxing video, Matthew, of the Dice Masters World's Finest that I did this past week. But that's not even out yet, and WizKid sent it to us to do an unboxing video of, so go check that out. There's some really cool characters in that expansion or that set.
Yeah, I think we have some
DC
Marvel Legendary.
Oh, yeah, we
DC
also have more.
Bought the new Crisis expansion for that one that came out.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if you've played the Crisis version. It turns it from competitive to cooperative, and it becomes...
Oh, maybe we should do that, because we played the base DC deck-building game, then we played Forever Evil, which was interesting. But one of the things we did point out was that it was kind of missing that cooperative take on it.
Yeah.
So...
The one big hit that DC Deck Builder usually gets is that thematically it seems a little weird that you are Wonder Woman, say, or Superman, and you're able to collect villains.
Yes.
And use the villains. So you're mm-hmm. like, why is the good guys using the bad guys to do stuff?
Right.
But if you're playing Crisis, then there's special superhero cards.
Mm.
And there's sort of like a, here's the scenario, you have to beat this before you can take out any of the supervillains.
Oh, neat.
And if you draw villains out of the lineup, they just get destroyed.
Interesting.
If you don't get to keep any of those.
I have those, so we probably will have to play that sometime.
Yeah,
future.
That sounds pretty cool.
And then I also got the Arrowverse expansion pack, but it did not arrive yet. So, yeah.
The fourth crossover one is Watchmen. And that one, I opened it up and I was like, oh, I don't even know what these cards are. There's all kinds of weird.
For some reason, I want to say that I have that one.
Weird rules.
Yeah, I want to say I have that, but. Who knows? They could be anywhere in that mess of stuff that I call a game shelf. Actually, a game floor.
Yeah, it's not a shelf at all.
All right, Matthew. Well, thanks for calling in, man. And hopefully we will talk with you tomorrow.
Okay.
All right. Take care. And Brad, thank you so much for being part of Finally Friday this week.
My pleasure indeed. Sorry about the weird voice.
What's that?
I said, sorry about the weird voice.
Oh, no. It sounds great. Deep voices go good on podcasts and stuff. So. if anybody wants to reach out to you, you're at Dr. Bradley Will on the Twitter, and we'll see if we can't get you back again real soon, Brad.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you so much, and thank you all of our VIPs. We will talk with everyone the next time.